Hello, would you please state your name, the date, the time, and your location?
Yes, my name is Dwelden Williams. Today's date is September 16th, 2022. Time now is 8:03, and I'm residing here in Phoenix, Arizona.
And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons License Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike?
I consent.
Thank you so much for being here with me today. Would you please start by introducing yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening to this?
My name is Dwelden Williams. I am a dialysis technician for 22 years now, here residing in Phoenix, Arizona. I came to Phoenix, Arizona as a traveler due to a COVID experience in April 2020.
Would you share more about that?
Being in my career for 22 years, and I've traveled across the nation, I reside in 28 states. So I live in every time zone due to the benefits of my career. In April of 2020, I was residing in Orlando, Florida. And when the news struck up against us in the world as far as COVID-19, that's when my experience took a definite turn in the dialysis world as far as isolation, social distancing, et cetera. I was teaching hemodialysis at the time as a part-time career instructor at OCPS in Winter Park, which is a city of Orlando, Florida. Due to COVID-19, immediately, as everyone knows, majority of schools shut down because, this was something that was brought upon us like a vagabond. So therefore, my role as a part-time instructor was very, very limited. Gratefully that I still practice as a CCHT, which is a certified clinical hemodialysis technician, I was able and granted the opportunity to travel across the nation. And this is, I ended up in Phoenix, Arizona, April of 2020, and I've been here ever since.
Could you tell me a story about what your life has been like during the pandemic?
Oh my goodness. I will say, when the pandemic started, the one thing I noticed as far as my life, there was less traffic on the road. There were a lot of restraints as far as where you can go. There was a curfew in Orlando, Florida area at the time. My life change was noticing individuals wearing masks, wearing gloves, individuals just being a little bit more cautious about who they talked to, who they were around. My life personally, due to the fact of me living alone, it really didn't change much. Due to the fact that in my career, we've always practiced using PPE. So just seeing, which is PPE, which is personal protective equipment, just to see that outside of a healthcare facility, it raised not one eyebrow, but two. It kind of take you, it made everyone think of the movies, certain movies that we may see. The one movie that stood out to me was Contagion. That's one of my favorites. And I would say to anyone, if you want to know the experience of COVID-19, to me, that came the closest and the most current, and it taught us a lot about washing our hands even more. I noticed we won't talk about the bathroom tissue, but I noticed the shortage of bathroom tissue and sanitizer, just like everyone else did. So by me being a traveler and coming to the West Coast of Phoenix, Arizona area, which I resided here before, things really didn't change too much. The only thing I can say is it was just limited places to visit. Those of us who work in healthcare, we work, countless hours. So we just, with us, we're just happy to get off work when the sun is still up, as I would say. So that was pretty much all of my change due to, I guess, me being more of a loner and not really having any small children that reside with me or any significant other. So my life really pretty much didn't change to the extent of others.
Did anything in the workplace change? Did you change anything about how you interacted with patients?
Most definitely. We, you know, in a rental facility, there were heavy precautions with you know, with vital signs, temperature spiking, temperatures being taken, just in our patient lobbies. Instead of patients sitting side by side, they had to practice the 6 feet of social distancing. More face masks were being worn. It, you know, as far as with those being interjected, those were things that caused a lot of delays as far as treatments. And what I mean by that is as far as the normal consistent flow of how the operation was working. So therefore, because there was more time that needed to be taken as far as to take care of the precautions of individuals, and that, you know, with temperatures spiking. And this was unknown to everyone. So this was all new to everyone. So those were the changes. And you know, in the healthcare, we use masks anyway. We just since 2020, we just use more, a whole lot more.
What are some of the things you noticed in your colleagues' reactions to the pandemic?
Notice, you know, some individuals, you know, with wearing the mask, I would say that was a big thing with everyone, with the pain, wearing it for so long throughout the day, lack of breathing, experiencing shortness of breath, feeling overworked, even as far as pain, wearing behind the ears and wearing a mask for so long, glasses fogging up. For those of us who wear glasses, our glasses fogged up. I know with me, my allergies, I think, probably increased a little bit more due to the fabric in the mask, as well as coworkers as well. One thing I did notice, the benefits of wearing the mask, you focus more individuals, their eye contact more. And you know, you could tell when someone's smiling or if someone you know, frowns or in deep thought. So it brought to me the eyes on the windows to the soul. So for to me and my coworkers, I think it brought us more closer together and being a little more focused, I would say.
Do you remember when you first heard about COVID-19?
Yes, I do. Yes, I actually remember hearing about it. I remember I was in Las Vegas, March of 2020, and I remember seeing, I was coming through the casino, and I think it was Harrah's Casino, if I'm not mistaken. No, it was the Link. And I remember seeing the Italian army there for some reason, and just seeing it on the news. You know, I was kind of totally oblivious of it. It was kind of out of place. And mind you, I lived in Las Vegas for 7 years, but you know, these gentlemen just kind of stood out. And I do remember a young lady from the state of Wyoming. I'm not sure. It was sort of like Midwest, but I remember meeting her for the first time at the conference that we had in Las Vegas. And I didn't see her for like a day or two, up until the last day. Only because we did like a lot of interaction, but word got out, less there were people, less handshaking, less hugging, less talking, you know, whispering. There was less of that. But this one young lady, I'll never forget, she said to me, she said, "I don't know if it was something I ate," she said, "but I was nauseous the past 2 days. I had a headache." She said, "I was sweating." She said, "I had diarrhea," and she said, "and I was on my menstrual." She said, "it's like something was fighting to get out of me." And yeah, remember, no one really knew about COVID-19 in the severe effects. I have reason to believe that it was real at that point in time due to her experience when I look back on it months later after the fact, you know, because I kid you not, whenever this was sparked upon us, some of us thought, "oh, it was just another strain of the flu. It'll pass." Not until one of my mentors, which is she's a registered nurse staff. She trained me as a technician. Her name is Erica Walker, and she said, you know, she said, "brother," she said, "no, this is serious." She said, "anytime the CDC puts something out," she said, "it's very serious." And that's when I stopped taking it lightly. And that was after April. That was in May. So you got me experiencing what I saw in March, with little whispers about it, and then up until April, it went in full effect. And then, you know, May, it just shot through the roof and above the stars.
Was there a lockdown where you were?
Well, when I was in Orlando, Florida, there was a curfew. Far as work-wise, there was never a lockdown because I work in healthcare, and you know, healthcare doesn't stop. When I came to the Phoenix, Arizona area, same rules apply. There were more hours being cut at department stores or they weren't open. But I never experienced a lockdown. I think mainly you probably see those more in hospital facilities. So I work outpatient, so we never had a lockdown. It was pretty much, you know, it was like the regular flow of traffic for us in an outpatient dialysis facility. We've always took precautions in healthcare, and let alone in renal facilities as well. So no lockdown.
How were you able to keep up with outpatient care, like demands with the need?
Oh man, definitely more teamwork. You definitely had to have a little bit more patience for your patients, if that makes sense. And what I've noticed with majority of managers, facility administrators, there were daily meetings, daily through corporate via Zoom. And you know, we all have FaceTime, but we all got to really experience Zoom, you know, and you know, that's what helped with the updates, with the constant updates, with the constant listening to the news, and just being open and being more aware and being more alert of your surroundings. So that's what changed. And like I said before, you know, in a dialysis facility, we've always worked together anyway. You know, as far as, you know, you know, I watch your back, you watch mine. So it definitely put a lot of people to the test as far as the definition of the word team.
What got you interested in doing this kind of work?
Oh my goodness. My mother suffered from ESRD, which is end-stage renal disease, back in the mid-90s. And those of us who know, who've been in this career, I've been doing this for 22 years, so half my life, I'm 45 years old now. Whenever we would take my mother to her treatments, we were totally clueless about what dialysis was. And you got to think about it. Back in the 90s, dialysis, nobody really much didn't know too much about it. Now it's considered quote unquote a fad. You know, it's like, who doesn't know about dialysis now, you know, opposed to back in the early 90s. So what sparked my interest was I was curious, for one, it not only affected her, but it affected our whole family. You know, being able to see your mother, father, spouse, siblings, et cetera, children, et cetera, to see them suffering and not be able to do anything about it, that wear a chair on anyone. I got into the career based on curiosity of why my mother felt the way she did. And it can happen to me. It can happen to anybody in our family, let alone any, you know, individual that we knew. We knew children, you know, kids, grandkids, et cetera. So curiosity, you know, it definitely killed the cat with me getting more involved. I took it upon myself to move to Charlotte, North Carolina, as where I started my career in dialysis. And you know, I guess I'm really telling my age, I'm still 45, but, you know, back then, you couldn't go on Indeed or Monster. You had to go to the unemployment office in North Carolina and get a referral. And you know, it's kind of like going to the library. You know, kids now, they don't know how it was going to the library or even picking up a phone, or let's not talk about the pay phones and the video and the VCRs and the tape recorders at home. So, you know, so with all that being said, things have changed over the decades. And it's not until I remember telling my mother that I entered the field, and she told me one thing. She said, one thing I want you to know is that you know, the individuals that you take care of, and I don't like to say patients, just, you know, the people that that I help take care of, she said, you know, they have lives too. They have lives out. And she said, I want you to think of me whenever you look at each and every one of your patients. She said, think of me and how you would want me to be treated, how you want to be treated. And she said, be yourself. She said, because individuals who you provide care for, they can see you better, you can see yourself, and they're going to know if you serve a purpose with passion and if you want to be there, if you want to show up and show out. So I would say overall, one word, curiosity, got the best of me.
I'd love to hear more about why you don't use the word patience.
Oh, let me tell you. So I remember attending the NKF conference in Boston, Massachusetts about 4 or 5 years ago. I was talking with one friend of mine named Sam Trevino. He's very, very well known in the arena world. Sam and Lacey Trevino, which is his wife. Sam Trevino received a transplant from his wife. And we were sitting in Boston, Massachusetts in the lounge, and he said, you know, we just got to talking, and he said, "Well, you know, I wish," and he said it with a calm voice. He said, "Well, you know, I don't like to say patients." He said, "We're people." And when he said that to me, I've always kind of felt that. And the one thing I would say about the culture in a dialysis facility, we're like family. We see each other 3 times a week on a constant, consistent basis. So, and some of the individuals that I help provide care for, some of them are to the point, are of age of being as old as my mother. They could be a brother, sister, and even some that are younger than me, my age, et cetera. So this isn't just their life here in dialysis. Yes, you know, we help provide care, we help them, but, you know, saying patient, to me personally, I feel like it's a little belittling, only because of what I see on a daily basis. Now, individuals, when I tell them that, they're like, well, I never thought, I never looked at it like that. I said, and no one has ever got offended by staying patient, because they know that they're here, we're here to provide a service. But when Sam Trevino said it to me, I just started addressing the individuals that we provide care for, which I've always addressed them, you know, with their name. But instead of me saying the patient I take care of, I say the individual that I work with, because we do work together. And I can't do this job without the individuals that we provide care for, which is known as our patients. So that explains the reason why I like to say that. I always catch myself saying that.
What are some of the things that you may have noticed about the people you're working with? What changing for them?
More stressed out, more due to heavy workload, constant hours. And this is a change that I think we are all just getting adjusted to. Notice more burnout. Notice more individuals that I work in a hospital system here as well, and I asked this question to one of the nurses, and she said, "Well, the hardest thing was seeing the instant death." She said, "That's when I know that it was beyond real. It was surreal." Experiencing individuals close to you that suffer from COVID-19 or passed. I myself know individuals who caught COVID-19, you know, coronavirus, COVID-19, and they passed on. Majority, they got through it. So I would say how it just affected everyone emotionally, physically, and mentally with the sudden change. It was a big change. It was a game changer, but it's not a game.
I'm curious. 2020 had so much going on that wasn't just the pandemic, and then the same could be said for 2021, and 2022 also has a lot. I'm wondering, other than COVID-19, what have been some of the other social and political issues on your mind?
Oh, you know, when this pandemic hit, it was, I always say it's 50-50. I say that because it was bad and it was good. It was bad due to the sudden changes of individuals losing their jobs, losing their careers, losing their businesses, individuals getting divorces, breakups, family loss, et cetera. Which took a toll on everybody. The other 50, it was good because I think a lot of individuals, and even myself included, realized their potential with more entrepreneurship, solopreneurship. And, you know, we at the Kidney Trails, we based on life lessons. And I hate to say this, it came at a perfect time for me to realize my potential as a graphic novelist, and to be a part of the Kenny Trails. If everybody has noticed that there were more, everybody was an entrepreneur, and everybody realized their potential, and they succeeded. A lot of people realized there were things that they could do that they know that couldn't be, they thought that couldn't be done. So I guess what the saying goes, you never know how strong you are whenever that's the only thing that you're able to do, and that's all you got.
I'd love to hear more about you doing artwork with the graphic novels during the pandemic and how that came about to you.
Oh my goodness. Oh, yes. Oh, God, I love that. Yeah, I've always, growing up, I always wanted to be an animator or a cartoonist. And I do have drawing skills because, my siblings, they also are, very artistic as well. I kind of got away from that, but it always had been stuck back in my mind. Who doesn't love a good comic book or a Marvel or DC movie? I've always been fascinated with animation. Even my personality is pretty much animated. If you can see my face now, you probably would say that. Yeah, I concur. But I would like to tell you something. When I was in Orlando, Florida, 2017, I remember it was either Tuesday, Thursday, or Saturday. I'll never forget this. I remember one of the individuals that I helped provide care for, I saw him drawing in his chair. I didn't see him drawing, but I saw him just kind of doodling a little bit. And I was so amazed with this gentleman. His name is Tori Harris. I was so amazed with him because what I saw on his poster board, I didn't even take my break. I think I sat and talked with him my whole break. And this gentleman, he's from the Bronx, New York, but he's living in Orlando, Florida. And he said to me, I said, man, did you draw that? He was like, yeah, just nonchalantly. He's like, yeah. And I said, no, did you draw that I see before me? He was like, yeah. And it was like a comic strip. It wasn't color, it was black and white. It was like a perfect comic strip, like someone took a picture. He reached in his bag and said, yeah, I have my own comic book. And I was like, no way. I'm thinking, he's paying, charging $20, $30, whatever, I didn't know. Only $5. And what I did was, he had a website, so I bought the comic book off of his website, because I couldn't give him money on the floor because, that's one of the boundaries where, with patient care, can't do that. I wanted to, but I didn't. And I had him make me a flyer by me running for, NANT, which is the National Association of Nephrology Technicians. I was running for president. He actually drew me a flyer of me standing beside a machine. I still got that picture too. And it was so amazing because there were individuals that knew me and didn't know me said that looked like me. So therefore I knew he was talented. So fast forward, him and I have always kept in touch through social media, through Instagram or Facebook, after I left Orlando. And I said, hey, man, I would like for you to draw for me. And he is actually my illustrator now, and he is still on dialysis. So our illustrator for the Kenny Trails, he is on dialysis. And I think that right there is inspirational, by itself. It will let a renal patient know that that's the thing that they can do. And also with this graphic novel, Anthony Reed reached out to me 2 years ago. And said, a year and a half ago, he said, I want you to write a blog for me. I was like, yeah, I'll do that because, people might know I'm pretty much well known on social media as far as LinkedIn, I would say. And I said, what about? He said, I want you to write about a patient's first dialysis. I said, I can't write about that. I said, I'm not on dialysis. He said, well, let me ask you something. He said, how long you been doing it? How long you been a technician? And at the time, it was, 20 years? I said, oh, 2 decades. He said, so you mean to tell me in 2 decades you have not experienced someone's first dialysis treatment? So Anthony Reed, he was saying, well, this is perspective. And I was like, oh, right. I said, let me think about it. It didn't take long. I said, Anthony, I can't just write this one story. I said, this is something that is endless and timeless. I said, because every renal patient has a different story. He said, you're getting it. And I said, how do you feel about turning this into a comic book form? He's like, yeah, Anthony Reed loves comics. He's a DC. He's more of a DC fan. I'm more of a Marvel fan, And so he says to me, let's not call it comic book. It holds more stature and credential and more status when you say graphic novel. And I don't know if you can see it, but the picture that I have of it, that's the picture of the graphic novel, and that's our motto: make your story make your story viable one word at a time. And I've got nothing but great, you know, support and comments about the cover photo, because it paints a picture of a renal patient, sad. You see a gentleman, which is me, handing her, you know, the tissue to wipe her tears. You see the dialogue. So those are things that people can relate. So the graphic novel, the star character is my mother, A.W. And my mother is deceased. She died in 2003 at the age of 56. So what I did with this graphic novel was I took myself back in time to whenever she was living. I brought her to the present of where I'm at in my career, based on me wishing that I was able to supply her with the knowledge while she was going through dialysis in the 90s. So I kind of went through a little time warp, you know. It's kind of like, hey, Mom, I want to tell you what to expect, and just hoping that anyone who reads this novel and read my story will be able to cope with dialysis, and their families will be able to understand how they feel. So I have not met one renal patient, dialysis patient, that can literally say to me or their family what they are going through. So I want you to ask yourself a question, kid. You know, if someone would say, hey, what do you do for a living? Or how was your day at work, honey, et cetera, whatever. You're like, ugh, you don't have a clue. Or you say, I don't want to talk about it. Whether it was a stressful day, if it was a good day, you still have a hard time kind of explaining it. But if we all could paint a picture of how our day is on a daily basis, oh man, you know, it's more vivid than anything. So that's what got me and inspired me until this day to want to print more graphic novels for not only just renal patients, but for everyone, the whole world to see. And that's what we try to supply the kidney drills.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
Oh, the word health means humble, means to cherish. It means possible chance. It means hope. It means awareness. It means being grateful, sincere, compassionate, empathetic, sympathetic. It's overall grand. Because when you say the word health, people say, are you in good health? I would say, well, that's the only kind of health I know. Yeah, and that's why I say that.
What do you think we would need to do as a society to make that version of health that you just described attainable for everyone?
Go beyond advocacy. With advocacy, you know, and I'm all about advocacy. I think we need to go beyond advocacy, because advocacy to me is you're just in one room talking to everyone who already knows about what we're talking about, if that makes sense. So I live by this role. I live by this model. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So we need to step outside of advocacy. We need to step outside of advocacy for one. And that's why our motto is explore the unknown territory. And which I agree with that so much, and I fully understand what Anthony Reed said, that he said, you know, Duella, what's the purpose of someone who needs a transplant to talk to other people about them needing a transplant if they're not going to go beyond that and try to reach out to individuals who can help them other than just say, hey, I need transplant. Yeah, me too, et cetera, et cetera. Like hitting a brick wall. So as a society, we need to go beyond advocacy. Advocacy is good. You know, I support advocacy, but I go beyond advocacy. More initiative, being more accountable for our actions, being able to agree to disagree with each other, despite our race, religion, political reason, et cetera. That's the major hump that we have to get over, that it's still an uphill battle, you know, to say the least. You know, the world, I think, I'm a firm believer in Bob Marley, how he said there's more good in the world than there is bad, because if it was so bad, you and I would not be on this call right now. So it's possible, a possible chance. So step beyond advocacy, go further than advocacy and raise more awareness.
What does the word safety mean to you?
Safety, it means security. Security at all costs. Security 360, security all around. That's what safety means to me. It means being secure. And when you say security, that can be physical or mental. You can be secure with yourself and you can feel safe. So yeah, I would say security overall.
Thinking about the sort of narrow definition of physical safety under COVID, what are some of the things that you've been doing to keep yourself feeling safer?
More and more hand washing, more and more wiping down of anywhere that should be touched, as far as, like, let's say, you know, doorknobs, handles, chairs, you know, bathrooms, kitchens. Being a little bit more cautious and being a little bit more clean. Definite hand washing, because, you know, that's the first part of contact. You know, universal precaution is hand washing. You know, that we learned that, you know, in healthcare, we learned that all around, even kids in school, they know that, you know, hand washing, constant hand washing, because that's the main means of transmitting anything, any and everything.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
I feel good. I think with this pandemic, it opened a lot of eyes. It opened a lot of individuals' third eyes. Well, I feel very confident. I feel more and more secure. Still, you know, bringing more awareness as I stop, but I feel more and more secure.
What are some of your hopes for a longer term future?
Some of my hopes are, you know, overall with me, to go more further in my career with the Kidney Trails, and as far as my career as a healthcare provider, watching my children get older and grow more, my grandkids as well. Overall, I'm working on my legacy to leave behind. You know, and one of these legacies are here, we're talking right now. This is a part of my legacy to get to share my story. Being part of Kidney Trails, letting everyone know that you can accomplish something through hard times. Because that's what happened to me. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I probably never would have, you know, became a graphic novelist if it wasn't for the pandemic. That's why I always say I'm 50-50 on it. I don't get political with the pandemic, you know, as far as saying, oh, I think this was a hoax, I think it was put into the atmosphere, yada, yada, et cetera. Because that's something that we can talk about all day, every day. You know, so that's my plan. Working more on my legacy, improving my awareness, being more accountable for myself, you know, being more empathetic with the individuals that I provide care for. I try to practice that daily. Being more compassionate. Don't be quick to judge. There's three sides to every story: his, hers, and the truth. And just learn to, you know, not to chastise, but let's try to fix the situation. Let's try to, you know, get more on kind of common ground. Agree to we disagree. And instead of saying we have a problem, let's start saying, let's find a solution. Because, you know, problems are going to be here when we get and go.
In times of stress over the last couple of years, who's been supportive of you? Who have you been able to turn to?
I would say my brothers, my sister, even my kids, even my grandkids, and some of my friends that I consider mentors. So I had a great support group, but I also had to look into myself as well. You know, it starts with yourself. That's where the home is. So that has been my major support. You know, family, friends, close friends, mentors, even some coworkers as well.
And what are some of the things you do to take care of yourself?
Oh, you know, I've started, you know, watching more about what I eat, getting more rest, which is more important. I don't exercise like I normally should, but, you know, I do a lot of stretching. I do a lot of stretching, and I go for a walk for a mile or two every day before I go to bed.
I'd like you to imagine speaking to a historian in the future, someone far enough away that they have no lived experience about this moment. What would you tell them cannot be forgotten about this period of time in COVID-19?
Oh, what cannot be forgotten in this period of time? I would say everyone you meet in your life has a last day with you. We just don't know what it is. Cherish the moment that you have with the individual that you love. Definitely control more of eating habits. Develop a more routine as far as taking care of yourself with, you know, I would say exercise. Be a little bit more clean, I would say. I love that question that you said, because now I'm thinking about what would I tell my grandkids, because the children had experience wearing a mask too. The kids thought it was fun, you know. And if they were asked, you know, how did I feel about it at this point in time, you know, and I would have to be looking back, I would say, you know, it was scary. It was afraid, being afraid of the unknown. So I would tell a historian, explore the unknown territory. And that's what we are based off of the King Trail, explore the unknown territory. Step outside the box, step outside the circle that's within the box. So definitely explore the unknown.
I want to thank you so much for spending this time with me today. I know you have to run, so I just want to open some space at this point. If there's anything you'd like to share that my questions haven't made room for, please take some space and share it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I would like to say that, I mean, it was actually refreshing to speak. And also, I would say that it was therapeutic. You know, one thing I've learned is sometimes when individuals are speaking or talking, they just want someone to listen. And, you know, this is you and I, first time meeting, so therefore you're non-biased and vice versa. So therefore, a lot of times, you know, when you talk to someone that's non-biased or that you don't know, you don't feel as though you're being judged, I would say. It's like a clean slate. So I would say that, you know, that's the one of the rewarding things today is, you know, being able to speak with you, and it's a privilege and honor for you to have me on here. I really appreciate that.
I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.